What's a stock actually worth? Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 32, volume number 3, How We Set Buy-Up to Prices and Why You Should Care, inside today's Daily Journal. Essay: What's a stock actually worth? The latest look at CPI inflation versus the 1970s disruptions of oil production and oil supplies. Oracle's blowout number chart of the day. Franco, Nevada, today's mailbag. In the spring of 1972, Morgan Stanley portfolio manager John Bristol sat in a wood-paneled conference room on 6th Avenue in Manhattan and made a decision that, 3 years later, would cost his clients nearly half of everything they had given him to protect. He bought shares of Polaroid at 91x earnings. It wasn't recklessness. It wasn't even ignorance. It was, by the standards of Wall Street in 1972, considered sophisticated thinking. The logic went like this. Certain American companies, Coca-Cola, KO, Xerox, XRX, Avon Products, then AVP, Johnson & Johnson, J&J, were so dominant, so reliably profitable, so structurally irreplaceable, that the normal rules of valuation simply did not apply to them. You didn't ask whether the price was right. You asked whether you owned them. These were the Nifty 50, and on Wall Street, they were considered as close to a sure thing as the market had ever produced. Fund managers bought them at 50x earnings, then 80x, then 90x. The analysts who raised their hands and asked uncomfortable questions about price were quietly dismissed. One well-circulated piece of institutional research from the era put it plainly: these companies were so superior that they represented a one-decision investment. Buy them, then do nothing. Forever. It was the most expensive piece of research Wall Street ever produced. When President Richard Nixon's inflation crisis hit in 1973, the Nifty 50 didn't just decline. They were dismantled. Polaroid fell 91%. Avon dropped 86%. The great one-decision stocks that institutional America had decided could never be overpriced turned out to be among the most overpriced assets in the history of the New York Stock Exchange. The investors who lost fortunes weren't fools. They had correctly identified great businesses. Coca-Cola really was irreplaceable. Johnson & Johnson really did have durable competitive advantages. Their analysis of business quality was almost perfectly right. Their crime was simpler than that. They had no number. They had no price above which they would not buy. No ceiling. No framework for translating the undeniable quality of these businesses into a rational entry point. They treated great company as a synonym for buy at any price, and the market taught them, painfully, that those two things have never been the same. That lesson, that even the finest business in the world can destroy your wealth if you overpay for it, is the foundation of everything we do when we calculate a buy-up to price for our recommendations. We are not in the business of finding mediocre companies at cheap prices. We are in the business of finding exceptional businesses, companies with high returns on equity and durable growth, and then doing the one thing the Nifty 50 investors neglected to do. We give ourselves a number. This week we are revising buy-up to prices for the entire complete investor recommended list, using a rigorous new equity pricing model and using the latest data from each company's quarterly earnings report. The intrinsic value of any business is created by its earnings quality and its earnings growth rate. Seems simple enough, but there are many ways of objectively measuring business quality and earnings growth. Quality: we're using the 5-year average return on equity, ROE, as our proxy for earnings quality. That's calculated by comparing the profits, net income, to the total amount of equity in the business. Again, that sounds pretty simple and straightforward, but it can be surprisingly complicated. Trying to figure out exactly how much equity is in a business can be hard. For example, goodwill is a very important line item to companies that own valuable brands or intangible assets. Accountants must evaluate their market value each year, and they require companies to take a charge against earnings if the value of those intangible assets has declined. But they're not allowed to revalue goodwill higher if a brand becomes more valuable. The impact of these accounting rules tends to inflate the returns on equity of asset-light businesses. But despite its imperfections, ROA is correlated to investment performance. Charlie Munger famously articulated why, over the long term, it's hard for a stock to earn a much better return than the business that underlies it earns. If the business earns 6% on capital over 40 years, you're not going to make much different than a 6% return. Conversely, if a business earns 18% on capital over 20 or 30 years, even if you pay an expensive-looking price, you'll end up with one hell of a result. We also know this empirically by looking at indexes that model for quality, like the MSCI World Quality Index. It selects the top 300 companies in the world, based on three factors: high ROA, consistent earnings growth, and low debt. It has annual returns, over rolling 10-year periods, of between 12% and 14%. The MSCI World Index, which is a market cap weighted index of 1,500 companies, and doesn't filter for quality, compounds at around 10% annually. Over long periods of time, the difference of investing only in high-quality businesses will make a huge difference in your results. By the way, the top 10 holdings of the MSCI World Quality Index, Alphabet, GOOG, Meta, META, Apple, AAPL, NVIDIA, NVDA, Microsoft, MSFT, Eli Lilly, LLY, ASML, ASML, Visa, V, TJX, TJX, and MasterCard, MA. These 10 stocks make up 31% of the index. To determine our buy up to price, we measure the 5-year average ROE of all of our recommended companies against the average ROE in the S&P 500, which is 17% annually. Companies with higher ROE than the average stock in the index are obviously worth more. Companies with lower ROA are worth less than the average. Growth. Next, we look at the forward earnings per share, EPS, growth rate based on consensus estimates. These are made by the Wall Street firms that provide banking services to these companies. While Wall Street analysts catch a lot of flack for pumping weak stocks to naive investors, the analysts that cover major, high-quality companies actually do a pretty good job of estimating their quarterly earnings. Today, the S&P 500 average EPS growth rate is 8%. Companies that are consistently growing faster than this are worth more than average. Companies that consistently grow at a slower pace are worth less than average. Valuation. Our analysis compares the quality, return on equity, and the earnings per share growth rate of each of our recommended stocks to the S&P 500, and then adjusts the resulting valuation accordingly. If one of our stocks has an ROA, that's the same as the S&P 500's, 17%, and a growth rate that's the same, 8%, then we would apply the S&P 500 earnings multiple, 20x, to the estimated earnings for the coming 12 months to determine the stock's intrinsic value. And there's one caveat. We want a margin of safety to make sure that we're not going to pay too much. So we discount our estimated intrinsic value by 20%. That, plus a few proprietary factors that compress the extreme ends of the valuations, is how we calculate our current buy-up to price. A company that's less profitable and growing slower than the S&P 500 is obviously worth less than the average S&P 500 stock. And a company that's more profitable and growing faster is obviously worth more. Using judgment on the edge cases, Deere & Company, DE, is one of the best industrial businesses in the world, but its earnings are expected to dip slightly this year because of the farm equipment cycle. Without an adjustment, the model would penalize Deere for a temporary earnings dip. So when forward growth is negative, we set a floor in our model. As we know, over time, Deere will grow at around double-digit rates. One other important note for the accountants among you. Some of our best holdings, Domino's Pizza, DPZ, Philip Morris International, PM, and Winmark, WINA, have negative shareholder equity because they've bought back so much stock. Their accounting gets screwy because the impact of the buybacks leads to a negative number for net asset value. Thus, ROA literally doesn't work. You can't divide anything by a negative number. For these companies, instead of ROA, we use return on tangible assets, ROTA, averaged over 5 years, which measures profitability against the physical asset base. In the past, we've set our buy-up to prices by making these same basic judgments, but we haven't done as much rigorous computation and we haven't reset them quarterly, which we will do from now on. We think this new approach will deliver more useful information to you on every stock we follow. Our intrinsic value estimates and the resulting buy-up to prices are now based on real-time quarterly earnings results and one-year earnings estimates, not gut or five-year outlooks. We're not building discounted cash flow models with terminal growth assumptions out to 2040. We're anchoring to what the market actually pays for these results, right now. It makes comparison easy. Every stock goes through the same framework, so you can quickly see where the biggest gaps are between price and estimated value. When you have limited capital and need to choose between positions, that's valuable. What it doesn't do, and we're honest about it, the model uses one benchmark for all sectors. A 12% ROA is outstanding for a utility but average for a software company. That means our buy-up to prices will favor asset-light, high-quality businesses. And we think that's appropriate, as these companies will compound your capital faster, given an identical growth rate. It also penalizes companies that are strong on one dimension but weak on the other. A business with a 50% ROA and 3% growth might be an absolute gem, a cash machine compounding quietly, but the multiplicative formula drags it down because the growth score is below the S&P benchmark. Finally, looking at a 1 year's future earnings outlook can greatly overestimate long-term growth. Thus, we cap expected growth rates to a maximum of 25%. Even so, For cyclical companies at peak or trough earnings, the model can overstate or understate fair value. The 5-year ROA average smooths the profitability side, but there's no equivalent smoothing on the earnings input itself, something to be aware of when our buy/sell/hold advice seems counter to the model. Putting it all together, there's one thing an objective and rigorous intrinsic value formula doesn't offer: judgment. There may be situations where we urge you to ignore the current buy up to price. For example, with the Persian Gulf closed for who knows how long, the earnings estimates for many of the companies we've recommended as hedges against an enormous energy price spike could end up being woefully low. In situations like this, paying more than the buy up to price could be good advice. The point is, the buy up to price is only a good starting point, an objective point of reference. You should always overlay your own judgment, competitive positioning, management quality, capital allocation, regulatory risk, and the macroeconomic picture. The goal isn't a perfect number. It's a disciplined, repeatable process that gives you a clear and objective measuring stick. This stock looks cheap, this one looks fair, this one looks expensive. Combined with our research and your own judgment, that's a powerful tool for making smart decisions about when to buy. For paid-up Complete Investor subscribers who want to review the revised buy-up-to-prices, click here. In the next Complete Investor issue on March 21st, we will provide a more detailed review of each of the recommended stocks whose buy-up-to-prices and buy/sell status are changing as a result of this refined approach. Tell me what you think. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. Good investing. Porter Stansberry Stevenson, Maryland. Presented by Crowdability Venture Capitalist. How to make significantly more than SpaceX IPO investors. When SpaceX IPOs, you should be selling instead of buying. A prominent venture capitalist and recent Black Label guest is revealing how to get SpaceX exposure before it hits the public markets. Right pointing finger emoji. Watch before the window shuts. Editor's note: keep in mind, we only accept advertising from publishers we know to offer well-researched ideas vetted by a legal team, excellent customer service, and reasonable refund policies. Crowdability is one such partner. We do not, however, under any circumstances make any representations about their investment ideas or strategies, nor will we warrant them as equal to our own. We do recognize that the markets are tempestuous, and, at times, ideas that we may not endorse prove valuable. Three things to know before we go. 1. CPI inflation flat. For now, energy prices have increased 52% year-to-date, but that surge is not reflected in February's Consumer Price Index, CPI, which matched January's modest 2.4% number. With the Middle East conflict likely to keep oil prices high, we may be headed for higher inflation. The parallels to the 1970s are hard to ignore. A supply shock rooted in geopolitical instability, a Fed that's already been cutting, and consumers who never fully caught up from the last round of price increases. 2. Oracle flexes its AI infrastructure muscle. Yesterday, cloud solutions giant Oracle, ORCL, delivered blockbuster Q3 earnings, reporting revenue of $17.2 billion, up 22% year-over-year, with its cloud infrastructure business up 84%. As a major provider to OpenAI, Oracle is a key benchmark stock in the AI build-out. It makes money when AI players spend money. 3. Rising tensions in the Strait of Hormuz offset record oil reserve release. Iran, it is believed, struck 3 cargo ships attempting to transit the Strait of Hormuz last night. This follows reports yesterday from the Wall Street Journal that Iran may be mining the strait. Oil prices jumped 6% today, despite the announcement of a release of a record 400 million barrels from the strategic petroleum reserves of a coalition of countries organized by the International Energy Agency. Energy prices will remain high until traffic can flow freely through the world's largest shipping choke point. Remember Porter's warning from Monday: the first casualty of war is the truth. We urge you to take anything the government says about Iran, oil supplies, or the Strait of Hormuz with a big grain of salt. Chart of the day: Franco-Nevada, FNV. Porter has long believed that gold royalty company Franco-Nevada, FNV, is one of the few genuine secrets of the financial markets and has been recommending it for more than a decade as the surest bet in the world and the very easiest way to become a millionaire. Why? Because it's a massively leveraged bet on the decline of the dollar's purchasing power, but without having to carry any debt. It owns royalties on hundreds of gold mines all around the world. It buys these royalties with new dollars and then reaps the rewards of much higher gold prices, as its royalties are paid in gold, not in dollars. In yesterday's Q4 release, it reported that revenue was up 86%. Earnings per share crushed estimates of $1.68, coming in at $1.85. Operating profit margin, 90.9%. The company raised its dividend 16%, the 19th increase in a row. Here's a simple plan to protect yourself from the madness of our government. Buy $1,000 worth of Franco-Nevada every month. If you've done this since its 2007 IPO, you'd own $2 million worth of stock, and be getting dividends worth about $1,200 per month, enough to cover your required investment spending. Mailbag of War We Started? Chet M. writes, Porter, I was there 47 years ago when Iranian students took hostages at the direction of the mullahs. Can you help me understand your comment, where you stated, there is no war against us? 47 years ago, we started a war against them, for absolutely no reason. I find this hard to understand. If perhaps you are speaking of the overthrow and installation of the Shah, that happened in the 1950s. Thanks for the excellent research and commentary. Porter comment. Chet, yes, I misspoke. I was referring to the CIA's decision, at the direction of the British, to depose their legally elected leader in 1953, Operation Ajax. That's why they hate us. And if you were in Iran in the 1970s, you also know how we supported the Shah and his regime. I apologize for the error. Porter Financial Chicanery Richard M. writes, All credit to Marty Fridson, loved reading the stories. I worked at Salomon Brothers while Marty was there. I wish he had been the overseer of the Treasury bond trading desk where I worked. I am sure he would have detected the chicanery of the manager's auction bidding. It brought the firm to its knees, saved only by Warren Buffett's intervention. Marty and Erez, the dynamic duo. I took your Friday advice. Mark B. writes, I sold my PNC holdings on Monday after reading your Friday journal essay. I agree with your thoughts. I invested approximately half the cash raised in the four energy plays you recommended as well. Paid off margin debt as well. I just moved to a more conservative approach as I agree with your thoughts on the US economy moving toward a stagflation-style economy, as too many cards are pointing in that direction. When the house of cards does finally fold, it's going to be a thunderous boom. I've read your analysis/briefings for 15-plus years, and many times you've been a tad early with your calls. You see things too clearly at times, but being very close to retirement, I believe it is prudent to be a year early, rather than a day late. I'll pass up some potential gains by being conservative versus gambling with perfect timing. As always, thank you for your insight and the knowledge and passion you bring to your work. It's much appreciated and well worth the price of admission. Please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may, or may not, be above the current buy-up to price. To learn more, visit the current portfolio page of the relevant service, here. To gain access or to learn more about our current recommendations, call our customer care team at 888-610-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.